Shedding Debt and Refining Its Focus. Welcome to this audio issue of Distressed Investing, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company. All rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. Recommending the beaten-down stock of an American icon. From two recent, very well-conceived acquisitions, we foresee further progress for this company's efficiency. On the plus side as well, it's reducing its debt. In short, the stock looks like a good, though risky, bet. Martin Fritz and three guys on a boat in the Gulf of Mexico is not the usual breeding ground for an entrepreneurial breakthrough. But in the early 2000s, Lyndon Hansen, Scott Siemens, and George Bodecker found themselves in a place few entrepreneurs would choose to launch a revolution: a sailboat navigating the waters between Mexico and the Florida Keys. Hansen, at 40, was at a rock-bottom moment, divorced, unemployed, and mourning the death of his mother. But on that trip, on that boat with two others, Siemens revealed a prototype that would change his life, and the footwear industry, forever, though the venture nearly went under once, as we'll see. It was a shoe made from a strange, lightweight, rubber-like material, riddled with holes like Swiss cheese. Originally designed as spa slippers, Siemens had been unable to find a market. Born a tinkerer, he had modified them, adding a heel strap for stability. He challenged his friends to try them. Their first reaction was immediate: "Those are ugly." Yet, as they fished and drank beer on the open water, the comfort won them over. The shoes didn't slip on wet decks, they didn't sink, and despite the heavy use, they didn't stink, a common curse of traditional boat shoes. When they returned to shore, they turned that ugly assessment into a business venture. They called them Crocs for their crocodile snout profile. The initial launch at a 2002 Fort Lauderdale boat show was pure chaos. Hansen tossed shoes at passersby, ignoring their protests that the shoes were hideous, simply insisting, "You just gotta try them on." It worked. People tried them, fell in love with the comfort, and within 3 days, they had sold 1,000 pairs. The success continued quickly, and sales escalated. By the time the company went public 4 years later, in 2006, it was a sensation with $350 million in revenue. But success breeds ambition, and ambition often breeds mistakes. Following its initial explosion, Crocs fell into a trap of overextension. In 2007, under the leadership of then-CEO Ronald Snyder, the company, convinced it could be everything to everyone, released a line of leather high heels. It was a bizarre, jarring departure from the ugly but functional clogs that defined the brand. Then the 2008 financial crisis hit. The brand that had once been a darling of the market saw its valuation crash 98%, sales plummeted 30%, and auditors openly questioned if the company could survive. It was bloated with unnecessary retail stores and disconnected product lines. The once mighty Crocs were on the brink of extinction. The turnaround began not with a flashy new product, but with a return to sanity. In 2014, private equity firm Blackstone invested $200 million and cleaned house. The real pivot point came in 2017 when Andrew Rees, a veteran of shoe brand Reebok, took the reins. Rees did the unthinkable. He stopped trying to make Crocs cool by forcing them into traditional fashion boxes. Instead, he embraced what they were. They began their success by being ugly. He slashed the company's massive list of product variations by half, cutting out the failed experiments like leather heels. He closed hundreds of company-owned stores, pivoting aggressively toward e-commerce and a direct-to-consumer model that boasted better margins. Perhaps most importantly, he leaned into the ugly identity. Instead of fighting the brand's polarizing reputation, he curated it. Crocs launched exclusive, limited-edition collaborations with high-profile names like Sail Bembury, Justin Bieber, and Post Malone. These partnerships proved that the clogs were a canvas for self-expression, not just a utilitarian necessity. Even the holes became a feature, turning into display cases for Jibbitz charms that allowed kids and adults alike to personalize their pairs. The results were transformative. Crocs didn't just survive, the company became a cash flow machine. It proved it was no fad, with sales skyrocketing to $3.6 billion in 2022. By the time it acquired the casual footwear brand HeyDude in 2021, Crocs had successfully positioned itself as a diversified powerhouse rather than a one-trick pony. Today, Crocs is a testament to the idea that business success isn't about chasing someone else's definition of cool. By embracing its functional, strange aesthetic, and by knowing exactly when to cut the fluff, Crocs turned its greatest weakness into a multi-billion dollar strength. They learned that if you focus on your own lane, eventually, the world will catch up. Crocs' decline stemmed from trying to force its functional clogs into cool fashion categories like leather heels, while the company whose stock we recommend this month suffered from bloated management, failed diversifications into financial services, and a short-sighted refusal to embrace digital technology, their turnarounds reflect a strategic return to basics. Ultimately, both companies reverse their trajectories by discarding distractions and doubling down on their core strengths. The Second Life for an American Icon. In October, we published A Second Life for an American Icon, recommending Xerox's 3.75% bonds maturing March 15, 2030. At the time, these bonds were trading at $530 per $1,000 face amount of bonds. Since then, they have moved sharply down. In normal cases, when a bond is trading at a nearly 50% discount and declines from there, the last thing we'd imagine is that we would be writing a follow-up recommendation on that company's stock. Nevertheless, here we are, and we believe for good reason. Since the beginning of the year, Xerox Holdings, NASDAQ, XRX, which has disappointed investors repeatedly over the last few years, has announced favorable developments relating to its management and its operations. The company is also taking its first steps towards strengthening its highly indebted balance sheet. In this report, we'll discuss these developments and why we believe that Xerox's highly speculative stock is undervalued. In our October report on the 3.75% bond, we discussed Xerox's operations and its storied history. By the 1960s, Xeroxing replaced photocopying in everyday conversation. This report will provide a quick overview of the company's business and will focus on the developments that have unfolded since October. We view the two reports as companion pieces and advise readers to revisit A Second Life for an American Icon for details. Briefly revisiting Xerox's business, Xerox dates to 1906, when Helloid Corporation, which manufactured photographic paper, was founded in Rochester, New York. The company grew and in 1938 licensed a patent from Chester Carlson, who developed electrophotography, which was a process for making copies using dry ink, like toner, and plain paper. Until then, and for some years afterward, photocopies were just a specialized form of photography that required development and printing. Xerox renamed the process xerography, based on the Greek words for dry and write/draw. In 1959, after 20 years and numerous false starts, Xerox introduced its 914, a fast, fully automated dry copier that accommodated plain paper in sizes up to 9 by 14 inches. The 914 had a sheet feeder, so it could copy multi-page documents without needing to lift the copier's cover. It made 7 copies per minute, lightning fast at the time, and could make a, then, breathtaking 100,000 copies in a month. The company had planned for international expansion before introducing the 914, choosing large companies with developed distribution systems. In 1956, it signed an agreement with the British conglomerate, the Rank Organization, to license, produce, market, and distribute Xerox products in Europe, Africa, and parts of Asia. In 1961, it signed a similar agreement with Fujifilm for Japan and the remainder of Asia. Xerox's original business model, Xerox's management at the time, led by its visionary leader, John Dessauer, understood that the company could make more money by leasing its photocopiers than by selling them. Here was his rationale. Leasing lowered front-end costs and made the equipment affordable for a larger universe of businesses. At the time, the universe of businesses that could afford to spend $27,500, roughly $320,000 in today's dollars, on a photocopier was limited rather than set a fixed lease price. Xerox opted to charge a per-copy fee, as the use of photocopiers skyrocketed. So too did Xerox's lease revenue. Xerox required its lessees to use the company's branded and highly profitable toner and supplies. In addition, it still sells a lot of copy paper at very attractive margins. The company bundled the cost of servicing the photocopier into the lease rate, which gave Xerox complete control of the printer's life cycle. By the late 1960s, Xerox had an astounding 95% share of the U.S. photocopier market. In 1970, the company made a legal splash by suing computer giant IBM, which had recently introduced its first dry copier, for patent infringement. Contrary to the popular saying otherwise, there is such a thing as bad publicity. Xerox's legal suit against IBM caught the attention of the Federal Trade Commission, FTC. In 1972, the FTC claimed the company was monopolizing the copier market. In 1975, the two sides reached a settlement, known as a consent decree. The FTC insisted that Xerox provide to competitors free access to any 3 of its patents. Xerox could charge licensing fees on the next 3 patents, limited to 1.5% of sales. The company was required to provide free access to all its many other patents, drawings, and blueprints. Canon, Minolta, Kanaka, and other Japanese camera companies were the biggest beneficiaries of the FTC's consent decree. Given their lower labor and other operating costs, these companies cut copier prices sharply. Within 4 years, Xerox's market share for copiers fell to less than 14%. Problem 2. Management bloat and short-sightedness. Xerox took the world by storm with its 914. Demand blew away even the most optimistic internal projections, which caused Xerox to expand at breakneck speed and to focus on sales. Rapid growth can hide a multitude of problems. In Xerox's case, it was a bloated management team that was obsessed with hitting quarterly revenue targets at the expense of long-term development. Xerox was able to maintain a research edge after the FTC consent decree, largely because of its world-renowned think tank, the Palo Alto Research Center, PARC. In 1990, for example, the company introduced the DownTech 135 system, which combined document scanning, lightning-fast copying, and its latest development, laser printing. The system remained the industry standard for commercial printers for years to follow. Unfortunately, management was short-sighted and considered digital technology, which didn't require paper copying, to be a threat and not an opportunity. Researchers at PARC were on the cutting edge of many important new technologies, including personal computers, photovoltaic solar cells, and much more, which Xerox either passed on or failed to successfully commercialize. According to Steve Jobs, had it capitalized on its own research and patents, Xerox could have been the largest technology company in the world. Problem 3. New technology. Xerox management's fears came true, and subsequent advances in technology reduced the need for photocopiers. By the early 2000s, developments made it simple to send documents by email, with a copy of the document stored in the outbox. Faster computers, nearly worldwide access to the internet, and video conferencing have turbocharged the trend away from paper documents, Xerox's reason for being for decades. To go one step further, the COVID-era work-from-home megatrend reduced demand for Xerox's profitable office-sized printers. Instead, the company sold more small printer-slash-copier combinations for home offices, which have slender profit margins. Even though it failed to capitalize on many of its own breakthroughs, Xerox's management understood that the company needed to reduce its dependence on photocopiers and their supplies and servicing. What followed were ill-advised forays into financial services and insurance, which were unrelated to its core business. Management struggled to operate these businesses, which were eventually sold at a $2 billion loss. In September 2009, Xerox announced an agreement to buy Affiliated Computer Systems for $6.4 billion, roughly half in cash and half in stock. Affiliated provided outsourcing services. It managed human resources, accounting and finance, and payments processing departments for large corporations and governmental units. There was some logic to this combination, since Xerox already had a small business process outsourcing unit that ran customers' information technology, IT, departments. The news triggered an immediate backlash from Xerox shareholders, who questioned the price tag, including dilution from the share count rising from 214 million to 340 million, and management's ability to run a very large operation that was related to just a small part of the company's business. The business was later renamed Conduent Corporation, and its shares, then worth $4.7 billion and now worth $1.1 billion, were distributed to shareholders. Institutional investors wanted the company to use its substantial cash flow to pay dividends and to repurchase stock they viewed as undervalued. Activist investor Carl Icahn took a 7% stake in Xerox in 2015 and threatened to remove the company's senior managers if they didn't agree to take these shareholder-friendly actions. As we wrote about in detail in our last report, Icahn's maneuverings proved detrimental to shareholders in numerous ways. He successfully killed an agreement to sell Xerox to its Japanese partner Fuji Corporation for $32 per share. Fuji sued for breach of contract, and Xerox ended up paying $1 billion. The related demise of the Fuji-Xerox joint venture, in which Fuji made certain Xerox-branded machines for Asian markets, effectively locked Xerox out of the profitable Asian markets. Worst of all, between 2015 and 2023. When the company bought back all of Carl Icahn's stock for $15.84 per share, Xerox spent $5.5 billion paying dividends and repurchasing its stock, leaving the company with a substantial debt load, and put it on a glide path towards bankruptcy, as reflected in the depressed trading price of Xerox's stock and bonds. We are guardedly optimistic that Xerox is making progress on both its cost structure and its strategy to resume growth. Xerox's reinvention program is on track to reach its goal of $300 million in annual savings. More on that below. The company's acquisitions of IT Savvy and Lexmark should generate revenue growth and incremental cost savings. The company recently appointed a new CEO and CFO. Both have a clear and realistic understanding of Xerox's problems and its opportunities. Taken together, these developments raise the odds that Xerox is nearing, or perhaps has even passed, a major turning point. Let's get into the details. Xerox's major reinvention program. In November 2023, Xerox announced its reinvention, a 3-year program aimed at operating more efficiently and profitably by reducing layers of management, eliminating the company's lowest performing products and services, and focusing on selling and cross-selling its core IT and document management services using the Xerox sales force in large markets and local third parties in smaller, mostly international markets, using artificial intelligence, AI, to determine optimal pricing by product and by market. To date, Xerox has reorganized its sales force according to business line rather than by geography, eliminating internal competition that was confusing to customers. It has divested non-core assets such as the once-fabled park and its Research Center of Canada. Since setting the reinvention program in motion, Xerox has acquired IT management business Izavi, now renamed as Xerox IT Solutions, and printer business Lexmark. The combination should boost revenue and lead to cost savings beyond initial expectations. What follows is a brief overview of the transactions, which we discuss in greater detail in our October report, A Second Life for an American Icon. Itzavi. In October 2024, Xerox paid $400 million for Itzavi, which provides a broad range of non-print IT services such as cybersecurity, cloud management, and office operating systems design. The company has a growing client base in the US, Canada, and the UK. Itzavi will double Xerox's revenue from services, which should continue to grow faster than the print business. Itzavi generated an operating profit of $30 million in 2025. Xerox estimates it can eliminate $15 million in redundant costs, which would bring its purchase price to 8.9x Isavi's operating profit in 2025, $400 million divided by $45 million. Xerox expects this figure to increase by cross-selling Itzavi's services to its existing base of 200,000 business customers. It has rebranded the business Xerox IT Solutions. Lexmark. In December 2024, Xerox announced an agreement to acquire Lexmark, a worldwide manufacturer and marketer of printers and related supplies spun out of IBM in 1991. Xerox paid $1.5 billion, which equates to 4.7x Lexmark's operating profit of $318 million. The combination was completed on July 1, 2025, at which point Lexmark's operating results were included in Xerox's quarterly income statement. The combination with Lexmark is sensible. Lexmark has a strong distribution network in Asia, which will help address the large gap created when the Fuji-Xerox joint venture was terminated in 2019. The businesses have complementary strengths. Xerox's strength is in slowly declining A3 printers, which are large and built for high-volume uses, while Lexmark leads in the growing market for smaller, less expensive A4 printers, which are built for lighter volume uses such as home offices. The companies have worked together since 2021. With Xerox providing repair services for Lexmark equipment and Lexmark manufacturing Xerox's largest copiers, the combined business will generate 72% of its revenue from high-margin businesses, supplies, such as paper, toner, parts, and IT services, and 28% from equipment sales. Together, the two companies sell equipment and services to more than 200,000 clients located in 170 countries. This creates a large-scale opportunity for cross-selling to each other's customers. Xerox expects to eliminate redundancies and achieve at least $300 million in annual savings by the end of 2027. In April, management reaffirmed that it's on track to achieve these savings according to its original timetable, and expects additional savings in 2027. A major change to Xerox leadership. On March 30, Xerox announced the promotion of Louis Pastor from the roles of President and COO to CEO, succeeding Steve Bandrowczak, who stepped down from the role and departed the company. The official line is that Xerox phased out the COO role for efficiency and cost savings. No doubt this is true, but probably not the whole story. We believe the more important reason is that this represents a major upgrade in leadership in replacing Bandrowczak with Pastor. Since joining Xerox in 2018, Louis Pastor, a lawyer by training at the University of Pennsylvania, has built up broad-based experience. Before becoming president and COO, Pastor served in a variety of senior roles, including Chief Administrative Officer, Chief Transition Officer, Chief Corporate Development Officer, and Chief Legal Officer. Based on his solid performance on the conference call to discuss the quarter that ended March 31, we're optimistic. Operating results and commentary from quarter ended March 31, Xerox's operating results for the most recent quarter surpassed expectations. Taken as a whole, the results reflect increasing revenue as a result of the acquisitions of Lexmark and Itzavi. Revenue for the quarter of $1.85 billion outpaced the consensus estimate by nearly 6%. Due largely to cost cuts, operating profit margins rose sharply to 3.9% from 1.5% in the same period last year. If we look at legacy Xerox, excluding Lexmark and Itzavi, revenue fell 3.7% in the quarter. This represents a noteworthy improvement over the 9% decline registered in the prior quarter. New CEO Pastor pointed to improving sales trends, which are making management more confident that the company will meet its 2026 targets, which are revenue of at least $7.5 billion, operating profit of $450 million to $500 million, and free cash flow of at least $250 million. These projected results will be underpinned by at least $150 million to $200 million in Lexmark-related savings, as well as a portion of the $400 million to $500 million of savings remaining to be achieved from the Reinvention Program. On the same conference call, Pastor discussed the ways in which AI should provide a long-term benefit to Xerox. The key point is that Xerox has evolved from a photocopier business into a document management company. Xerox now has decades of experience designing complex hardware and software systems that manage document flow, provide layers of cybersecurity, and ensure regulatory compliance for its corporate and governmental clients. For example, Xerox's intelligent data processing systems can extract data from handwritten notes, emails, and printed documents of all sorts. These enhanced IT systems provide automatic document summaries and feature advanced subsystems for redacting confidential information. In short, these Xerox systems collect, organize, and transmit the data used to train the large language models at the heart of AI. Additionally, Xerox has used AI internally since 2018, including for enhancing the effectiveness of its sales force and technical support staff, as well as for predictive maintenance. The IT services industry, broadly and within Xerox, is expected to continue to grow over the long term. This growth will be related to the incorporation of AI into all aspects of a business's operations. Quocirca is a market research and advisory firm that focuses on the printing, imaging, and digital workplace markets. It's followed by most of the corporate IT professionals who allocate resources and select vendors. The company named Xerox as a leader, a top-tier vendor offering a comprehensive set of service offerings for the second consecutive year. CEO Pastor lays out the company's strategic priorities. During the conference call, management emphasized the company's three strategic priorities: stabilizing revenue through a combination of new products from Lexmark and cross-selling Xerox's IT solutions and digital services, such as document handling systems, to Lexmark's customer base; increasing profitability with savings, transformation, Lexmark, and its Savi, as discussed earlier; and growth related to Lexmark's distribution in Asia and its complementary printer offerings; reducing leverage by using cash flow from operations and from the runoff of finance receivables from Xerox Financial Servicing to reduce debt, including through bond repurchases at a large discount in the open market. During the quarter that ended March 31, Xerox took two specific steps intended to speed up its paydown of debt. It issued warrants convertible into stock at raised capital that it can use to repurchase bonds at deep discounts in the open market warrants. On January 28, Xerox announced that it would distribute one warrant for every two Xerox shares held on the record date of February 9. This includes the 48 shares into which our 3.75% bonds are convertible. According to then-COO Louis Pastor, this action is part of a deliberate sequence of steps we are taking to strengthen our balance sheet and improve our capital structure in support of our long-term objective of creating sustainable shareholder value. On February 12, the company distributed a total of 77.3 million warrants expiring February 14, 2028, or sooner in certain cases. Each warrant entitles the holder to buy one share of Xerox stock at $8. These warrants currently trade at 40 cents each under the ticker symbol XRXDW. If all the 77.3 million warrants were exercised, which is possible but not likely, debt would decline by $618 million, 77.3 million multiplied by $8, and number of shares outstanding would rise by 77.3 million to 207 million. These warrants have an unusual feature. The $8 exercise price can be paid with Xerox bonds, some of which are trading at around 38 cents on the dollar. For example, the issue we recommended in October, the Xerox 3.75% bonds maturing March 15, 2030, are currently trading at $380 per $1,000 face amount. This provision links Xerox's bond and stock prices according to the following equation: one bond plus 125 warrants equals 125 shares of Xerox stock. It means that if Xerox stock rises, the price of its bonds, particularly its lowest priced ones, should rise as well. This formula sets up the opportunity for an arbitrage, buying and selling two equal things at the same time and pocketing a profit of the bonds and warrants on one side and Xerox stock on the other. To use a current example, based on a bond price of $380 and warrant price of 40 cents, it creates the new stock at $3.44 per share, as compared with a current stock price of $3.18 per share, $50, $125.40, plus $380, equals $430 divided by 125 equals $3.44. This is above the current share price of $3.18, which means at the moment the arbitrage is unprofitable. This is not a bad thing since it means that the bonds have indeed risen along with the stock. This option to pay the $8 exercise price with discounted debt continues until Xerox's shares trade above $4 per share, based on the stock's volume-weighted average trading price, on 20 out of 30 consecutive trading days. Once this happens, the company may choose to extend the right to use bonds to exercise warrants. Our best guess is that since Xerox's goal is to reduce its debt substantially, it's likely to extend the opportunity. The warrants will expire early if Xerox's stock rises to $8 per share, again based on the average trading price for 20 out of 30 consecutive trading days. This scenario would be a home run for current bondholders and stockholders. Selling IP to improve liquidity on February 17, Xerox announced that it had raised $450 million from a transaction with a group of lenders led by TPG, a celebrated firm, formerly named Texas Pacific Group, known for investing in private equity and other non-public assets. On the surface, the transaction is a complicated joint venture in which Xerox gets $450 million and gives up half ownership of its intellectual property, IP, including certain patents, brand names, and trademarks of its owners. In essence, it's a five-year loan backed by Xerox's IP. Technically, Xerox will pay 2% on a large part of its $7.5 billion in revenue as a licensing fee, in lieu of interest and principal, to the joint venture, which will use the money to repay the borrowing that funded the $450 million distribution to Xerox. Assuming it makes all payments as scheduled, it will regain full ownership of the IP after the loan is paid off in 5 years. If Xerox defaults on these payments for any reason, it will own just under 50% of the assets through its stake in the joint venture, subject to the unpaid balance of the venture's borrowings. Xerox entered this transaction during its seasonally low liquidity period early in the year. The company can use the proceeds without restrictions. Management indicated that the funds would likely be used to increase the amount of cash on hand, liquidity, to be better able to ride out any bumps in the road for costs related to the reinvention program, which include the integration of Lexmark, to take advantage of the highly discounted price of the company's bonds by repurchasing them in the open market. Between the funding of the loan on February 17 and the end of the quarter on March 31, Xerox bought back $101 million face amount of its 5.5% unsecured bonds maturing August 15, 2028, for $45 million. This represents a gain of $56 million, since the company spent $45 million to cancel $101 million in debt. The bond repurchase reduces Xerox's annual interest expense by a little more than $5.5 million, $101 million times 5.5%, and shrinks the face amount of bonds that mature in August 2028 from $750 million to $649 million. Based on management's comments, the company is likely to use a portion of this cash to pay down more debt, including more open market repurchases at a steep discount from face value, to whittle down the size of the August 2028 maturity. The company may also use some of the cash it will generate to buy back bonds. After using $150 million cash in the recent quarter, management expects Xerox to generate roughly $400 million in cash flow from operations over the next 9 months. The company will also receive cash as the equipment loans and leases it made to customers are repaid. Starting to attract attention, the potential combination of increasing operating income and declining total debt could lead the market to take notice that it may be in the early stage of an operational and financial turnaround. On May 15, Startipo Invest, a Prague-based investment fund, announced that it had purchased 6.6 million shares of Xerox, equivalent to a 5.05% ownership stake. According to its chairman, Franicek Basel, "Xerox is a high-conviction special situations investment of ours. We believe operational improvement, balance sheet optimization, and strategic optionality may materially reshape market perception over time." The announcement noted that Startipo may communicate with Xerox's management and board of directors to discuss enhancing shareholder value. "Typically, we are concerned that activist shareholders will push for dividends and/or stock repurchases. In this case, we note that Startipo supports management's operational and financial moves and is looking to be a constructive, long-term shareholder." On June 4, Startipo announced it had increased its stake from 5.05% to over 6% of Xerox's stock. How the books look as of March 31, Xerox had a total of $4.58 billion debt and $637 million in cash. Based on an expected operating profit of $740 million to $790 million before depreciation, this net debt of $3.94 billion equates to 5.0x to 5.3x Xerox's projected operating profit for 2026. If we exclude the $1.4 billion in debt that is related to its former, now outsourced, equipment financing business, which is more than covered by the associated accounts receivable and leases, leverage falls to a more reasonable 3.2x to 3.4x. Projected operating profit of $740 million to $790 million in 2026 covers Xerox's $330 million of interest expense by 2.2x to 2.4x. We need to adjust this calculation to account for $160 million in required pension payments due in 2026, which are not deducted in the calculation of operating profit. With that, Xerox's coverage ratio falls to 1.8x to 1.9x, which we view as an adequate, but not comfortable margin. We expect that Xerox's credit statistics, both total leverage and interest coverage, will improve as the company continues to buy back its bonds at deeply discounted prices. This will benefit the remaining bondholders. We estimate that over time the company will end up buying back anywhere between $200 million and $700 million of bonds at between 50 cents and 75 cents on the dollar, $500 to $750 per bond. This would reduce Xerox's debt by anywhere from $50 million, $200 million repurchased, average price 75 cents on the dollar, to $350 million, $700 million repurchased at an average price of 50 cents on the dollar. For example, if the company were to buy back $300 million of its bonds at an average price of 60 cents on the dollar, it would cost the company $180 million. Since it reduces debt by $300 million, the overall effect is to reduce the total bonds outstanding by $120 million. Assuming the company bought back $300 million of its 5.5% bonds maturing in August 2028, Xerox's interest expenses would decline, and free cash flow would rise, by $16.5 million on an annualized basis. Valuation. Now we will value Xerox by looking at comparable equipment manufacturers: Hewlett-Packard, HPQ, Canon, CAJ, Ricoh, Ricoh, Konica Minolta, Naka. We calculate the multiple for Kyocera, Kyosi, but exclude it from the final average because it's significantly higher than the multiples for the rest of the companies. We base our analysis on 2027 projections of operating profit, before depreciation, and earnings per share, EPS. We use company estimates for Xerox and analyst consensus for the other companies. Starting with Xerox's projection of operating profit, before depreciation, of $740 million to $790 million in 2026, we use a projected range of $750 million to $850 million for 2027. This may prove overly conservative. Comparable companies trade at an average multiple of 6.9x. Based on debt as of March 31st and 130 million shares outstanding, this values Xerox shares at between $4.57 and $9.87. To estimate Xerox's EPS in 2027, we start with operating profit before depreciation of $750 million to $850 million and deduct $330 million for interest expense and $290 million for depreciation. If we apply a 30% tax rate, a guess, and 140 million shares, allowing for stock bonuses and the like, we get an EPS range of 65 cents to $1.15. We round that down to 50 cents to $1. The average EPS multiple of the same group of companies is roughly 11.2x. Based on EPS of 50 cents to $1 per share, we arrive at values of $5.60 to $11.20 per share. Putting the pieces together, we arrive at a composite valuation of $5.08 to $10.53 per share, as compared with a current price of $3.18 per share. Risks: Xerox's bonds are subject to numerous risks, including Xerox's business is subject to economic conditions worldwide, and particularly in the US and Europe. Xerox's core businesses of copiers and print management have been in decline for many years and may continue to weaken. The copier and print services markets are highly competitive. Many competitors are larger and have better finances than Xerox. Xerox may encounter difficulties integrating its Xavi, Xerox IT solutions, and Lexmark into its operations and may not achieve the expected benefits because the company has a high level of debt. Extended economic weakness, from a sharp decline in demand for Xerox's products and/or from market-related factors like recessions, could cause the company's cash to dwindle to precarious levels. The large discount in the trading price of its bonds indicates the market believes the risk of a bankruptcy filing over the next few years is elevated action to take. Buy Xerox Holdings, NASDAQ, XRX, up to $3.75 per share. Although we believe the potential upside from current levels is considerable, the stock has risen significantly over the last couple of months. Investors may want to start with a partial position and accumulate stock on market or company-related weakness. A review of current recommendations: Super Micro Computer bond price soars, In our May 9th report, A Supercomputer Company Under Super Distress, we wrote about Supermicro Computers, NASDAQ, SMCI 3.5% convertible bonds maturing March 1, 2029. From the time we began to write the report, until the date it was published, these bonds rose from roughly $820 per $1,000 face amount, which equates to an annual yield of over 11%, to $925 per $1,000, equating to a 6.5% annual return. We believe that the risks inherent in the bond investment called for a return of 9% to 10%, or $845 to $865 per bond. Since then, Supermicro's stock and bonds have rocketed higher for a combination of reasons. The company agreed to work with the Taiwanese government to prevent future illegal diversions of server technology stocks, particularly those associated with artificial intelligence, have risen sharply. Published analysts have begun to raise their price targets for SMCI shares. As a result, Supermicro's 3.5% bonds now trade at roughly $1,010 per $1,000 face amount of bonds. At current prices, this equates to an annual return of under 3.5%. We will continue to follow Supermicro. An update will follow in the event that the 3.5% bonds decline to levels where the annual return better reflects what we see as the true risks involved with the investment. AMC Entertainment. People are going to the movies. AMC Entertainment, NYSE, AMC, reported its strongest domestic and international box office attendance since 2019, which was the strong year that preceded the pandemic. We note that since then, the company has reduced its operating break-even substantially, which means that if the box office remains strong, the company should be very profitable in the current quarter. If this box office strength continues through the summer, 2026 could shape up to be the company's strongest year since 2019. We continue to recommend purchasing AMC Entertainment up to $4.50 per share, well above the current price of $2.10. Sabre Shedding Debt Travel Software Company, Sabre NASDAQ, Sabre, issued $150 million of 7% bonds maturing in 2031. It will use $100 million to repay the issue of 7.32% bonds maturing on August 1, and will use the balance to repay additional debt. After this repayment, the company has no debt maturing before 2029. This should give management a long runway to continue improving Sabre's operations and results. We continue to recommend purchasing Sabre shares up to $4.50, well above the current price of $1.63 per share. Peloton Interactive gets new CFO. Fitness equipment maker Peloton Interactive, NASDAQ, PTEN, announced the hiring of Sid Thacker as its new CFO. He was most recently CFO of Rent the Runway, where he was responsible for cutting costs and restoring the business to profitable operations. Although we continue to like Peloton stock, at the current price of $5.57 per share, the stock is well above our buy up to price of $4.25, so we recommend holding shares. JetBlue Airways manages fuel costs. JetBlue Airways, NASDAQ, JBLU, provided a favorable outlook for operations in the current quarter. The company sees average seat miles, a measure of capacity, rising 2% to 4% in the quarter, as compared with a prior estimate of 1.5% to 4.5%. The airline indicated that it's seeing strong demand across its markets and expects its revenue per seat mile to rise by 9% to 12%. As compared with a previous expectation of 7% to 11%. As expected, based on advanced sales when oil prices were lower, the company has been able to pass through about 40% of its increased fuel costs in the quarter. It expects to be able to fully recapture higher fuel costs by the end of 2026. The company now expects to spend $225 million on capital expenditure in the quarter, down $50 million from its previous estimate. Even though higher oil prices will affect JetBlue's results this year, we believe the company's operations are improving. We continue to recommend purchasing shares of JetBlue Airways, which is currently trading at $4.64 per share, up to $7 per share. To see the full list of recommendations, click here. Martin Fritz & Porter & Company. Stevenson, Maryland. For important disclosures and disclaimers, please visit our legal disclosures page. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hoped you enjoyed this audio issue. In addition to this issue, you should check out our top 3 best buys, where we highlight 3 current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point today. You can find the top 3 best buys under the Best Buys link on our site at porterandcompanyresearch.com.